to yet again another non-emergency podcast for which we do not have a paying sponsor.
Well, this might be a little bit of an emergency if we think it might be connected to that El Salvador bond that's coming out and the failure of the El Salvador advisors to provide copies of the indenture to everybody. But so maybe more of an emergency than normally.
That could be, but I think we're going to talk about something else, aren't we? I think we're the gift that keeps giving, the Argentine GDP warrants, is what I had wanted to talk about. Would that be okay with you?
That's exactly what I want to talk about too. It's this wonderfully obscure opinion. And do you want to tell me what intrigued you about it? And then I can tell you what intrigued me about it.
Yeah, I mean, so it's the opinion out of the Southern District in New York. Judge Preska, right? I know we accused Judge Preska falsely of making a decision in a prior case involving Hamilton Bank, and we were wrong. It was not Judge Preska, but this time it is Judge Preska, right, who issued the ruling saying, as I understand it, that all of the plaintiffs there messed up because they were supposed to go through the trustee if they wanted to bring a suit for non-payment under these GDP warrants, and they didn't. They filed a lawsuit. They filed lawsuits themselves, and that was in violation of the so-called no action clause. And so, therefore, they lose. That's what I want to talk about, because I think it's really interesting, and I'm not sure whether it's the right reading of the contract or not, and I wanted to talk about that.
So can we, my threshold question is, when you read it, did it come as a surprise to you, given what we know? We've discussed the GDP warrants in the English context. Did it surprise you?
Oh, I was prepared to talk about how Argentina had lost, and I was going to be hopefully deferring to you, because I have to be honest, I find the merits of these GDP warrant cases so confusing, and we have good friends who feel strongly about it and tell us all of the reasons why Argentina is in the right here and shouldn't have to pay. And they're really smart people, and I respect their wisdom, but I just have a very hard time understanding the arguments. And so I'm in some ways, I'm happy, because while I am perplexed at what happened, I feel like it's a little bit easier to talk about.
Yes, this is definitely more fun than sort of the who is in the right moral position in terms of who should get paid and who should pay. But I have to say that this completely floored me in many ways. And so shall I articulate why I found this just stunning?
Please. Yes, I would like to hear that, and then maybe it will overlap with why I was surprised and a bit confused by it.
Okay, so to provide the backdrop to anybody who hasn't been following this, we have followed the GDP warrant saga for some time. It starts way back when, in 2005 and 2010, with Argentina's restructurings. And in that restructuring, as like a little bonus for bondholders, Argentina gives them these GDP warrants, for which it doesn't get diddly squat, according to most people. And then, fast forward, these things turn very valuable in part because Cristina Kirchner is fudging the inflation numbers. At least that is one allegation that is made. And then the Argentines, after Cristina Kirchner's government is gone, tries to fix those fudged inflation numbers, and then investors sue. And investors win in a massive way in courts in England, over $1 billion. And that is one of the big lawsuits. And there's another big bunch of lawsuits that's happening in the US where supposedly even more billions are at stake. And we all think, well, maybe not we all, but I thought based on the English case that there would be a victory for the bondholders here as well. So for me, that context, I was expecting a victory for the bondholders here as well.
So I was confused and surprised at the outcome too. You know, maybe our friends who've been following this more closely would tell me there's some substantive difference between the warrants, but if there is, I don't know what it is. And, you know, the same instrument, I just assume is and should get the same treatment in both jurisdictions. There's no, it's a silly thing to have a different substantive outcome. So I was expecting the same result, and I didn't really even pay much attention to the issue that Judge Preska ultimately ruled on, this no action clause. And so I guess maybe I can put the question to you, me too. There is, at least as I understand it, there's a not bad, maybe even a pretty darn good textual argument, I guess, that the no action clause basically, as I understand it, requires them in all cases to go through the trustee, all like 100% of cases, no exceptions. And only if the trustee fails to act after being told to act and having an appropriate indemnity and all that, only then do you get to file your own lawsuit. And I think I understand the textual argument for that. And I think I concede that that is a reasonable interpretation of the text, but the outcome seems frankly bizarre to me. And I don't understand why you would have different rights under the bonds, where it's clear that if you don't get paid, you can go and file your own lawsuit. I don't understand why you would have a different set of rights under the GDP warrants. And so I guess I have two questions for you. The first is, do you see this tension between the, it's like a mildly absurd result, but also sort of consistent with the text? And so like there's a, that kind of standard New York Four Corners-y tension, which I wanted to talk about. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is like, is this a, if we assume this outcome is not really what was anticipated, is this a goof or is this a case where somebody left a little, I don't want to use the word landmine, but I'm going to use the word landmine. You know, like, 10 years ago, I probably thought these markets were pretty damn efficient contracting markets. And then in the interim, I came to think of them as not very efficient contracting markets. But what I've started to think over the last few years is that the people who draft these documents have an incredible informational advantage. And I'm starting to wonder if they are, I don't want to be too cynical, I don't want to accuse anyone, we know some of these people, but I want, like, I'm starting to wonder if some of these just some of these things are there on purpose, are they? Like, do you wonder? I feel like this is like mildly devious. I don't know. So anyway, question mark.
Okay, there was so much there. I can't get up but laugh. Okay. Okay, step one, it's totally absurd that in England you get a multi-billion dollar recovery on the same instrument. They're basically identical except for governing law. In the US, you get Dipkus, zero. And we can explain it, like, it's really like on a completely technical matter. And that same technical matter, as the best I understand Judge Preska's opinion, she says, oh yeah, this was applied in England too, but those doofuses didn't rule on it in the way that I ruled on it. So absurd that the identical instrument would have completely different recoveries. And in fact, the rumors were that they would get a bigger recovery in the US. But here's,
can I interject for one more second though? I'm sorry,
please.
I don't want to take you off track, but do you think
please.
It's absurd that bondholders could sue directly for a missed payment, but GDP, like, leaving aside the English New York law difference,
totally absurd. theory of why this is a landmine, or it's not a, I think it's the type of landmine that somebody intentionally planted. I got, like, you go through the document and you think either it's a monumental goof, or it's brilliantly done. Because, and then, you know, but let's walk through what happens. So the bonds are issued with the GDP warrants attached to them. When they are issued, the GDP warrants are like this tiny, tiny, irrelevant add-on. And they're valued at like close to nothing. So the bond is issued. The people who are buying the bonds only care about the bonds. And then they got this little thing. Is this like a pretty flower on top of the bond, or a little rubber ducky, or something like that? And so they pay attention to the terms of the bond. Any attention. And the terms of the bond say, if you miss any payment, on principal or interest, you can sue. You don't have to go through the trustee, because going through the trustee is a royal pain. It basically takes another 3 months to go through. I mean, if the trustee is really slow, and trustees are always really slow, really inefficient, really obsessed with indemnification. So everybody always thinks if you don't get your payment, meaning you're not trying to sue early, you can always sue for those payments. But the documents only say that for the bond. They don't say it for the GDP warrant, or somebody thought they said it for the GDP warrant, but forgot that the GDP warrant doesn't pay you interest or principal. It pays you this kind of contingent payment that is clearly neither interest nor principal. I can't help but think, well, okay, I don't really know. Initially, I thought this is like just a ginormous, stupid goof. Like, people were focused on the bond and they forgot that the GDP warrant is a different instrument, or they were like, this thing is never going to pay much, so who cares? But now you've made me think, and I think Judge Prescott maybe thought this too. It's just really clever drafting on the part of the Argentines. And, you know, it's on the bondholders that they didn't notice this.
I guess, I mean, it's the structure is weird. So like in the indenture, it referring to the bond, it's got one paragraph that basically says it's the no action clause, you got to go through the trustee. And then it's got this separate paragraph 4.9 or whatever that gives you the right to sue individually for missed principal and interest. And then in the separate documentation for the warrant, there's just like this one paragraph that has the no action clause, except it references that paragraph 4.9 in the bond documentation. And like the natural reading is that that reference is only there to make clear that you have the same right to sue individually, and you've got to follow it through and think. And then there's like, well, why are we referring in the GDP warrant documents to this exception that apparently doesn't apply to them, which is another separate question. And I've come up with a story in my head about why you might do that, because the GDP no action clause is broadly enough written to refer to the bond too. So like, you need to refer to the separate paragraph for the bonds to make sure that if you hold both, that your GDP paperwork doesn't keep you from suing on your bond for a missed payment. Like, you can kind of co concoct an explanation for what they're doing on the assumption that they're trying to, like, that the contract really does prevent individual suits under the GDP warrants, but you've got to be reading it deviously. And nobody is going to read it deviously at the time of issuance, right? Or very few people are going to be like, let me come up with the best argument I can to screw myself before I decide whether this is worth buying.
I mean, we know. I mean, we don't know. We were not there. But we know, from all the stories we've heard, that nobody was paying any attention to the GDP warrants at the time of the restructurings. Nobody was paying attention to it. And this is the kind of drafting you expect either when nobody's paying attention, or when, because nobody's paying attention, somebody's like, I'm gonna just slip in some, you know, really gnarly stuff that's gonna screw the holders. But here's why I doubt the slipping in the gnarly stuff, but I can't disprove it, is because, you know, if I slipped in gnarly stuff that saves Argentina, let's say, you know, $5 billion, and I'm the lawyer and I'm sitting, I've retired now because this was, God, this was so long ago. This was 15 years ago. I'm betting the partners who drafted this are so long gone from Cleary Gottlieb or wherever. I mean, it had to have been Cleary. They're long gone. They're on the beach somewhere. I'd be expecting a check for $250 million from Argentina if I'm the one who slipped it in. I am betting that Argentina is not sending any checks out,
Oh, that's right.
warning them with anything, which suggests there's no front-end incentive to do something. And if so, then the explanation is
Well, the front
that.
end incentive is everyone who knows, and I'm not including myself in this group, right? Because I'm just purely speculating, but everyone who knows you're a genius. And you know,
But
if
they're
you
retired.
might
They're
still
on
be working.
the
You don't, yeah, but you don't know how long it's going to take for people to figure out you're what a genius you are. You and you know, you still like to, even on the beach, it's nice to know people are thinking fondly of
But like
you.
this is a screw up on so many levels. So the people, the holders of the GDP warrants, right? The holders of the GDP warrants didn't properly read the document. Even though literally it does say what Judge Preska says. I mean, I think she's
It's a
totally
fair
fair.
reading.
It
Yeah, it's
is
fair.
what it says. She didn't have to rule that way, but it is what it says. And they didn't read it, so they didn't go through the trustee. It would have been trivial to go through the trustee.
Well,
And
that's
if
what I
the
was going to ask. Would it, like,
yes,
did
the
they have a
trust.
reason for not doing this? I mean, the trustee would sue on behalf of everyone, right? But no, you have to
Yes.
do that. Well, anyway, sorry, I interrupted. Go
There's,
ahead.
I don't see any reason. This, every holder of the GDP warrant is entitled to this. The
Yeah.
trustee would have, I mean, if the trustee had not brought suit, you would sue the trustee. And then you're in, on solid ground. So the rule says, the contract says you have to go through the trustee. And they think, oh, but it's a payment that's owed, so we don't have to go through the trustee because that's how it works with the bonds. And so they forget to go through the trustee because they think that this is what the bond says. They don't go through the trustee. This issue is not really, although it seems like it was raised in England, but the judge is like, no, that's stupid. I don't remember the judge saying
I
anything,
don't
but that's
either,
what
but
Preska seems to suggest.
yeah.
And so then in the US too, they don't do it. And in the US, Argentina's lawyers in the US are able to better make that argument. And I think like the GDP warrant holders, they just screwed up. I mean, it may have cost a little bit more to go through the trustee, gotten them a little bit more delay, but now they might lose billions because they didn't go through the trustee. Because, and maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong. My impression is, A, they didn't go through the trustee, but B, enough time has passed since at least their claims for the early years that the claims fail because they're time barred. Like the statute of limitations and the prescription period both have passed, meaning because they didn't do the procedural stuff, potentially a multi-billion dollar claim is now zero.
Yeah, I didn't. I was afraid you were going to ask me this. I wanted to ask you. And I confess I forgot even to look at the prescription clause. But you know, I think
I think
maybe
prescription clause is 5 years,
5 years.
or
I mean,
maybe it's like, yeah, sorry.
maybe potentially is the right word rather than definitively. But you know, I there definitely are situations where if you mess something up procedurally and your case gets dismissed and then you refile it, but the statute of limitations has run in the interim, that your newly filed lawsuit can be time barred. That's why, you know, sometimes judges will transfer a case if, for instance, it was filed and there's no jurisdiction, they can transfer it to somewhere where there would be jurisdiction. And one of the reasons for doing that is to kind of save you from the running of the statute of limitations. So I don't actually know whether the statute will have run. I think this was the 2013 payment or maybe the 2014 to whatever. I don't know whether the statute will have run, but I that seems like that's the next argument, right? And it does, seems entirely plausible that the argument would work.
And it's not just that. There was a lawsuit on the prescription clause that Judge Preska refers to. And in that case, they were trying to, the Argentina was trying to argue that the prescription period had lapsed. I think that was 5 years, and the statute of limitations was 6 years. So Argentina was trying to get rid of some of the claimants who had not sued until, who had sued between 5 and 6 years. And now both the prescription period and the statute of limitations have surely passed the claims. There might still be left because the damn bond, the GDP warrants are alive till 2035. But I find it hard. This is a lot of money that is gone, unless there's something we're not seeing. Maybe there's clever lawyering that can still.
I don't, there are tolling arguments and whatever, but yeah, this is clearly not the optimal situation for the plaintiffs here. And it is kind of weird. I mean, I wish I know that. So first, there's a footnote too where Judge Preska comments on how this why is Argentina raising the argument now? Like, how surprising it is that it comes up this late in the game. And I saw that footnote appears early in the discussion of the no action clause. And so I saw that footnote and I was like, oh, she's going to give this the back of her hand. Like, she's dropping that as a way of saying, like, and now I'm going to reject it on the merits, but whatever. I'm doing you a favor even considering it. So I was stunned when she accepted the argument. I wish she had written a little bit more to explain why this makes sense. But I understand you're interpreting the text. You think the text says what it says, and it says it clearly. She doesn't have an obligation to justify why the textualist reading is also the logical reading. But since it so seems so clearly not the logical reading, I wish she had explained more.
Okay, this is basic contract law, but isn't like you can't, what is it called? Reformation? You can reform the contract if it's clearly like I can't say for sure that it was not intended. And if it was like a sneaky drafting, that's intended, right? Sneaky drafting is okay.
Well, you'd have to go in there, and it would be kind of impossible in some ways as an investor, right? Because you're not a party to the drafting of it, but you're not going to bother seeking reformation of a New York law governed security because the argument implies, like, you sort of concede for purposes of the argument that the instrument doesn't say what you want it to say. And like you're way behind the eight ball if you even make that argument in the alternative, right? So it doesn't surprise me that nobody made the argument. But yes, it's like, yeah, it's
I mean,
there are no
she
good explanations. Either it's a mistake or it's devious. It's devious, right?
we need some, we need people to email us and tell us whether they were the devious drafter and how they got this in, or whether it's completely stupid and they were the stupid drafter. We would really like to know. And we will, well, I guess we will not reveal your identity, but we are very curious as to whether this was a monumental goof or not. I mean, I'm guessing, look, bonds plus the GDP warrants were negotiated by the same people. And the people on either side of that transaction didn't care about the GDP warrants. Is that enough of a defense to like explain to the judge and say, look, judge, if you understand the drafting process, you'd understand why this is so, this part is so goofy.
Well, I mean, first of all, everyone would have to agree on that, right? Which they're not going to do ex post. I don't know how to answer that. But probably even then, no, right? I mean, again, it's a fungible, tradable contract. You're not supposed to be able to unwind what the thing actually says that easily. But I don't know. I am just, I respect the decision and the reading of the language. Like, I can't complain about it. I am just astonished that here we are with such a major kind of plot hole in the contract.
But I don't remember whether this was, so remember there was the case with the registered holder and the beneficial holder, and that was also a New York case. And in that case, a district court judge was like, there was a very good textual argument. I think it was Sri Lanka. They made a very good textual argument for why the bondholder shouldn't be allowed to sue. And the court was like, this is completely stupid. Like, this is like, and they did substance over form.
I think there were a bunch of other, now this doesn't really change your point, but there were a bunch of other cases that had said that, and it seemed to be clearly the accepted commercial practice. This is like getting a letter from CD&Co basically saying like, here, you can,
But the lawyers had a good argument that in this case, the language was different. It was even tighter about not allowing the beneficial owner to sue. And the judge was like, no, I'm not going to waste any more time by like delaying stuff. They're allowed to sue. So substance over form. Here, Preska's opinion to me is total form over substance.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean, to be fair though, you don't, there's no substance unless a litigant decides to introduce a bunch of evidence telling you what the market understanding is, or the general kind of commercial sense of the contract. And I'd have to go back and look again at the briefs and supporting materials, but I don't remember anyone really doing that. I mean, everybody treats it as a just a straight up question of contract interpretation, where the text is all that really matters. So I don't think we can say what Preska would have done if she had been given a bunch of contextual information and somebody had asked her to take it into account in interpreting the contract. Because I just don't think she was given any. Maybe I'm not remembering correctly.
I confess I have not gone into the materials, and maybe won't, but this is so much more interesting of a case than I thought at first, because I thought it was just another like kick the Argentines, and instead they're very cleverly won. I mean, they need to give their litigators a big prize, or they need to give their sneaky drafters a giant house in the su south of France. But maybe the bondholders, who are very sophisticated, can come up with some way of getting out of this. I don't know. It seemed pretty open and shut that the bondholders are out of luck, and they've been litigating this for a long
Sure.
time. There's a
Yeah.
lot of fees that were paid on this. But anyway, is that a wrap? Is that all we can say
I th
about
I
the
think that I think that's all that I have, but I'm let me just reiterate how much happier I am to be talking about this stuff than the merits of the actual warrants themselves and the claim on the merits. This is so much more fun and comprehensible, so I'm happy about that.
I was worried at the early part of the opinion, where she does go a little bit into the merits of the claim and the argument. I'm like, oh no, I'm gonna have to read this stuff again, and then I'm gonna have a bunch of people. Didn't we have people yell at us, like send us nasty grams saying we didn't understand how GDP warrants work? I'm sure we got some nasty grams. All right, dudes, this time bring it on, bring it on. Bring it on. Bring on your nasty grams, because you nasty grams people probably lost on this. On
That's
just
true.
some
It is
plain lawyerly reading.
the angry emails do tend to come from one side of the spectrum. It's true.
But I have to say, angry people, I kind of think you got screwed on this one. But it's a Mark, just last question, and then we'll wrap. Is this appealable to the Second Circuit? I mean, of course it's appealable. I don't see any big mistakes on her part. Any mistakes that you would reverse?
I mean, reading text, you could, the Court of Appeals can do that as well as a district judge, right? So and I don't see any reason why you wouldn't appeal it. So I don't know. It doesn't seem, this is not the kind of thing where it would be like assigned to the district judge's discretion. Right. So, maybe there's a chance for an appeal. Who knows? But,
Although let's just say I'm Aurelius and I'm very irritated that we forgot to ask the trustee, and I have like 5 years of lawyer bills that now are worth zero. And now the lawyer says, maybe I can file an appeal too for another $3-4 million in lawyers' fees.
Or how about you file the appeal for free?
Okay, we're just speculating. We don't know anything about the law. Don't sue us for casting aspersions because we're just speculating. We don't really know what happens and what actually happened. We're just reading the opinion and speculating. All right, nasty gram people. Did we do any libel or any of that? I don't think so, but all right, that's a
Our
wrap.
legal team will check it before we post it.
Thank you, Mark.
See you later, me too.